A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, Lepsters in Lepland. How are you doing today? I hope you're all doing well out there in all corners of podcast land, wherever you are, whatever you find yourself doing at this particular moment. You've chosen to press play on this podcast episode, and I thank you for that. Welcome to my podcast. My name's Luke, and I'm an English teacher from London, and this is my podcast for learners of English like you, I expect. Are you a learner of English? I expect you are, if you chose to listen to this. Here I am again at my desk in the podcastle, preparing a new free episode for you all. I've taken a little break from the mammoth premium series I've been doing this week about homophones and jokes. Premium Lepsters will know that I've uploaded 8 parts of series 24 now, and there are still 3 or 4 parts to go. If you haven't checked them out yet, do so. In the Luke's English Podcast app, in the categories section, you'll find premium and also pronunciation videos. That's where you go to get the premium content on your phone. On a computer, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium to get all the premium content there. And for more information and how to sign up, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. But this is free episode number 678. And in this one, you're going to listen to a conversation with a guest who hasn't been on this podcast for over 10 years. Today, I'm talking to my friend Howard Roach, who first appeared in episode 5 about Joaquin Phoenix. And then he made at least one more appearance in episode 11, which I think was called Men versus Women. And then that was it for nearly 11 years until now. I know Howard from our days teaching together at the London School of English, but he's back again now to talk about something completely different that he's been doing since he stopped teaching 7 or 8 years ago. Howard now works in the vintage furniture trade in London. He gets hold of pieces of vintage furniture, then sells them on to customers, perhaps restoring the furniture in the process. This is a business that he set up actually 8 years ago when he decided to transition from being a teacher to being a furniture dealer. Howard's business is called Vintique London. That's Vintique, which is a sort of a portmanteau word, a mix of the word vintage and the word antique, put them together, Vintique. So the business is called Vintique London, and this is what it says on their website, vintiquelondon.co.uk. The Furniture Relove Revolution, retro, vintage and mid-century furniture warehouse, London. Based in Peckham, Vintique London is an eclectic treasure trove of retro, mid-century, vintage and designer furniture and interior accessories. What started out as a hobby collecting iconic vintage and retro pieces soon turned into a startup business in 2012. Since then, we haven't looked back. So I'm now going to talk to Howard about the vintage furniture trade in London, what kind of stuff he sells, how he buys, sells and restores interesting and cool items of furniture, and if he's got any stories about particular purchases or sales that he's made in the past. As I mentioned before, Howard also used to be an English teacher working with me at the London School of English with other guests from this podcast that you might have listened to in the past. So there are also a few tales of teaching from back in the old days in London at the beginning. I'd like to look at some vocab, actually, before we go any further. Let's have a quick look at some vocab to begin with. Here's some stuff that might come up in the conversation, and generally stuff that's relevant to the topic of buying and selling furniture. So here's some language that you need to know. So obviously, first of all, we've got the word furniture, but you need to know that it's an uncountable noun. So we don't say a furniture, and we don't say furnitures. It could be some furniture, okay? Or maybe pieces of furniture or items of furniture, okay? But it's an uncountable noun. Then we've got the word vintage, which you've heard a couple of times. Vintage basically means that something is typical of a period in the past and of very high quality. So vintage furniture is just from a specific period. I guess we would contrast this with antique furniture by saying that vintage is probably a bit more recent than that. In fact, you know, you can talk about retro furniture, retro stuff, using styles or fashions from the recent past. For example, we specialize in selling retro and vintage pieces. So in this case, the vintage period that we're looking at is mid-century, which is the next phrase in the list. Mid-century, meaning from the middle of the last century. So we're talking about 1950s, 1960s. For example, most of our items are mid-century in style. So that period from the sort of 50s, 60s, that kind of style. Very plain, simple, functional furniture. Some people refer to Scandinavia. They talk about like Scandi style, that sort of thing. Mid-century retro vintage stuff. Then we've got the expression turn of the century, meaning the beginning of the last century, the early 1900s. For example, it's also possible to find pieces from the turn of the century. So that period at the end of the 19th century. We've got the word antiques or antique. Antique means old and valuable, like an old and valuable item. And you can think darker, more ornate pieces from an earlier period. Antiques, often darker, more ornate in style. Then we've got the phrase dark wood furniture. This is furniture made from darker woods, like mahogany and other types of dark wood furniture. We have the word secondhand. If something is secondhand, like I bought a secondhand guitar, for example, or secondhand bookcase. Secondhand means it's previously owned by someone else. For example, all items are used or secondhand, but have been fully restored to their original quality. Used is the same as secondhand, basically. Have you ever heard of a car boot sale? It's an absolute staple of English life, the car boot sale at the weekend. This is an event where people load up their car boot with stuff from their home or from their loft, like old stuff that they've just had in storage. And then they drive to a field and open the boot and sell the contents to people. It's where everyone drives there with all their boots open and you walk around. It's like a market, but you're buying stuff out of the boot of people's car, a car boot sale. It could be a way to pick up antiques, in fact, or vintage items. For example, I first started going to car boot sales and markets where you can find some real bargains. Then we got the expression an auction, A-U-C-T-I-O-N, an auction. This is an event where things are sold by bidding. An item is presented and the bidding begins at a certain amount. And people in the audience can raise their bids until the item is sold to the highest bidder. It's like eBay, but it's in real life. That's an auction. For example, I've bought a few things at auctions. You can learn a lot from the other dealers. We've got the adjective restored. If an item is restored, it means it might be fixed or certain parts might have been replaced, but it's back to its original look and its original quality. For example, a fully restored mid-century vintage chest of drawers. And then we've got the word quid. So if you say 30 quid, quid means pounds. It's just a sort of colloquial slang word for pounds. So 30 quid means 30 pounds. For example, it's just 75 quid for you, mate, means it's just 75 pounds for you. Let's just quickly go through some items of furniture and let me describe what they look like. You can imagine what they look like as I describe them. So first we have a chest of drawers. This is a large, wide item with drawers. Drawers are the things that you pull out. You might keep your socks in the top drawer. Okay, D-R-A-W-E-R, drawer, a chest of drawers. Okay, it's a large rectangular item with drawers in it. Then you've got a bookcase, which is an item with space for storing books, of course. A sideboard. A sideboard is a low, long piece, which is supposed to go against a wall and contains some drawers and some cabinet space. You could put a TV on it, but that's a sideboard, low and long. Goes against a wall. A high board is like a sideboard, but it goes higher against the wall with perhaps a glass cabinet with just two doors. Then you've got a record cabinet, which is a space for a record player and records. You've got dining chairs, which are chairs for sitting at a table. They don't usually have arms on them. They're upright. And then armchairs. These are chairs for relaxing in the living room. Okay. So there you go. That was some vocab. Let's now get started. As I said earlier, before we get to the whole topic of Howard's furniture business, there is some chat about our time as teachers in London with about 15 minutes of stories and reminiscing about teaching. And then we get onto the furniture. Not literally. We don't actually climb onto the furniture at any point in this episode. But when we get onto the furniture, we're not also literally getting onto the furniture, conducting the interview balanced on chairs and tables. No, it just means we're talking about furniture after about 15 minutes. But anyway, now for the first time in over 10 years, let's welcome back Howard Roach onto Luke's English Podcast. Howard, hello.
Good evening. You all right?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good, mate. You?
Very well, thanks. So how's it going? How is everything? How are the kids?
Very good, mate. I mean, growing so quick. I mean, they're like 6 and 4 now.
Yeah.
And I've really noticed a difference in the last kind of, in the last couple of months. Basically, they sort of wanted to hang out with us. They're like, let's go down the park and meet other people and play football. So they're like, they're getting more and more independent every day. And I'm seeing that, you know, in like a couple of years, they'll be like, yeah, fuck off. Go and do your own thing, Dad. I'm not interested. So... So yeah, you know, I mean, time consuming though, as I'm sure you know.
Right. Yeah. How's everything else? How's the wife?
Very good. Very good. You know, we just celebrated 10 years Did when we were in lockdown. So, yeah, been together. Honestly, it's amazing how quickly it all flies.
We've been together 10 years as well.
Have you?
Yeah. 2010.
You know what? I remember the day you came in and you were like, yeah, I met this girl like in a bar, like this French girl. And I remember you actually talking about it. God, I can't believe that's 10 years. I mean, where did you leave London School of English?
I do remember talking to you about it. I remember exactly where we were sitting. We were sitting at those two computers just next to the entrance to the teacher's room.
It's weird. Do you remember? How do I remember things like that? How long ago did you leave London School of English?
2012. Sort of September 2012 is when I left.
Yeah.
Did you leave before me or after?
No, I think I left. I left in 2013.
Okay. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? How time flies.
Oh,
I do miss
mate,
those days, isn't it?
Scary.
Yeah.
What's that?
I was going to say, I do miss those days, sort of like it was quite good fun, wasn't it, hanging around? But there was good people. We had a good gang of people.
You know what? I think it was a really good age to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like I was in my 30s, mostly in my 30s. And I think it was a really good age to kind of be doing that sort of job because you've still got loads of energy and... You know, you kind of like enjoy the social. I enjoyed, when I look back on that, the thing that I enjoyed the most was the social part of it. You know, the actual teaching bit of it, I didn't really enjoy that much. I found it quite stressful, I think. So I'm kind of really glad I did it. And I had a lot of fun. I got a lot of really good memories. And I am quite sad, you know, when I see like photos of like the school or something like that, I really sort of reminisce and think, oh, you know, Friday, what would I be doing on a Friday now? Probably, you know, like you got the hour off when Lee does his talk. And it's, you know, I'll tell you what's so weird. It took me quite a few years, like probably 5 or 6 years to actually get out of that. Okay, you start a lesson at 9:15. I was so regimented into doing 9:15 to 10:30 lesson, 10:30 to 11 break. And I still remember all the times and it's amazing. Like, cause I don't know, it's, and sometimes I still think, God, what would I be doing now? You know, I was at London School of English.
Cause you know, one of the best things about being a teacher is that the sort of, when it's good, being in the classroom and interacting with the people and everyone's like, you know, the visual side of it and all that stuff.
You know, it's one of the best, but it's also one of the worst, isn't it? You're like coming out of there going, oh my God, like coming out of really sweating, going, oh, that was the worst lesson ever, like with a massive headache.
Or you go in on Monday morning and Pete's like, you know, Howard, it's like change of plan. You're going to be doing an IBC this week and you're like, fuck, it's like 45 minutes. You're like, I need a
Rick's leadership lesson.
Yeah, so we had lots of those moments, like the two of us, like at computers, fucking typing and trying to.
I remember being literally 1 minute till the lesson's going, and everyone's getting, and I'm still like, I haven't got a lesson, somebody give me a lesson. And literally walking up the stairs, still thinking, what am I doing? You know, and I'm sure I told you many, many a time, like after a few years, I started having this recurring dream that I was. I was in the staff room and the lesson was about to start and I didn't have, and it must have been like a really stressful thing for me in life, because I constantly, and up till a couple of years ago, I swear I was still getting those dreams. You know, I was in the staff room and it was about to kick off and I still didn't have anything. And yeah, but anyway, that's always the way I've kind of worked. So
post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think it is.
It is nice to talk to you again after quite a long time. We've just been chatting for about 25 minutes already. Yeah, like the last time I saw you was ages ago. So how shall I begin? What I normally do is when I speak to my friends on this podcast, I say to, I ask the person how we know each other. How do we know each other?
So like, how do we know each other from, when did we probably met about 10, 11 years ago, I think.
It's longer than that.
Really?
Yeah, it's about...
So I started... We met at the London School of English. We were both teachers.
Mm.
And I started in 2006 and you probably started in a couple of years later.
I started in 2006.
Oh, did you? Yeah. I think I might have been there. So maybe I started a year early. I don't know. Yes, we met like 14 years ago. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, both of us teachers. And... And yeah, I kind of like showed you the ropes, I think, kind of like taught you what you know now. So, yeah.
That's right. Maybe. I remember. Do I remember me? What do you remember about our days as English teachers at the London School of English?
A lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Everything, you know, certainly me, was last minute. We had a lot of fun in the staff room, a lot of good times, you know, with the students. And, you know, I remember it with a lot of... a lot of good memories. So yeah, no, it was all good, you know, and some things I can't repeat, obviously.
Really?
But yeah, of course. I mean, there wasn't, I think most of the time, you know, we were professional, but you know, there was the occasional slip.
<But yeah. laughs> I guess so. It was 14 years ago, wasn't it? Yeah, we've got some stories.
Yeah, it's a long time. And we were in our youth then, you know, so now we're like adults, we've got kids, you know.
Yeah.
So things have changed.
What were the worst things? Because you're not a teacher anymore.
No.
For you, did you enjoy being an English teacher?
What I enjoyed was the social part of it, like meeting the students, meeting from all these people from around the world, doing the, you know, I used to play football with them every week. I did a lot of the social events, which the school kindly paid me for. So those are the bits I loved. The bits I hated was probably the teaching bit, which I found quite stressful.
So the worst part about teaching was the teaching, basically.
Well, it was kind of knowing, like, you know, when you actually got in depth of the teaching, you know, like when people started asking me about grammar and all that sort of thing, I found that, because I didn't really know a great deal about it, I found that quite testing, shall we say. That was the hardest.
I remember.
But it was a lot of fun in general.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, I just remember, I mean, you were a popular teacher. So even though you say that you felt like you didn't know grammar and things like that, that maybe wasn't your strength. But, you know, you had other strengths, which was just the ability to engage the group and to, you know, they...
Make them have fun.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun.
Do you remember any...
There was a lot of games and songs and...
Do you remember any of your favourite things that you used to do in class?
Some of my favourite things. So we always used to like listen to music and sing along to the music. And I'm sure some of the other teachers probably remember, you know, I used to, every Friday, it was like, get Robbie Williams' Angels out, to get them all to sing. That was when I had nothing else to do. I was literally spent. What else? So those, a lot of just like games and what else? What else did we do?
I remember once you rushing down into the teacher's room.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it was a break, maybe a 10-minute break. You rushed into the teacher's room, and this has gone down in legend now with all the people we used to work with. You know what I'm going to say.
Is it the one about the present perfect?
Yeah, it is. You rushed into the teacher's room, stressed out, and you like... which we used to do sometimes. You'd rush in, you know, we would rush into the teacher's room and ask our colleagues a question about grammar that we were trying to, you know, deal with. Because at the London School of English, it was quite stressful because it was a school with a good reputation. It was quite an expensive school,
Yeah. Maybe
one of the most expensive schools in London, actually, which was great. I mean, it was a great school to work in because they looked after their teachers quite well. and for lots of reasons. But it was quite stressful because the students expected a certain standard.
And they used to mark you out of five at the end of the week as well.
Not even at the end of the week, at the beginning. Do you remember?
At the beginning, yeah, twice on a Tuesday and then on a Friday as well.
Yeah, that's right. So you'd be you'd have your first class on Monday. You'd teach them for 5 or 6 hours on a Monday. And then within the first hour and a half on the Tuesday morning, you'd have to give them these first impression slips.
Oh, I hate it.
And the first impressions were basically, are you happy with X, Y, and Z? Are you happy with your course? Yeah. Are you happy with your accommodation? And some other things like that. And, like, you know, we had to use some kind of Derren Brown mind control techniques when we handed those forms out. Do you remember? It's like, you know, I used to hand them out to the students and say, so the management would like you to complete these forms. It's, you know, it's no big deal. We just want to check that you're happy with everything, right? And if you're not happy with anything, then, you know, the manager will want to talk to you.
As I remember, I think a few of my forms actually might have gone missing between the classroom and the manager.
It's quite possible. But it was always a horrible moment for us that when we handed them out and that nervous, sweaty sort of feeling.
Especially after you've taught someone, because some of the courses were like a month. So if you taught someone for a month, and, you know, you think you've had some really good banter and you've got on really well, and you thought, you know, this guy's learnt something, and he respects me as a teacher, and, you know, he's really taken on board everything I've told him, and, you know, I think we've got a really good relationship. And then he gives you a 2 out of 5.
At the end.
He's like, oh, my God, I want to kill him.
Yeah.
That was hard.
That's the end of the week. They'd give full detailed
feedback. It could be the end of the month as well, couldn't it? Because some of the classes were a month.
Right.
Or even longer, right? 6 weeks,
right,
I think.
Yeah, we used to collect in those yellow feedback forms, and they were like,
the Friday
opportunity. They would mark us out of five for various different categories, and there are also sections in there about, like, questions. Some of the answers that turned up on those forms were pretty funny. Do you remember the one? There were two funny, like, famously funny responses. One of them was like, where has your English improved the most? In which areas? That's it. In which areas has your English improved the most? And one person wrote High Street, Kensington.
Brilliant.
You know, obviously it should be, you know, my speaking or my vocab. It's like, which areas? High Street, Kensington. Great. You learned a lot of English on the course. And the other one was like, what do you think we do best at the London School of English? And the answer was melting people from different countries.
Oh, classic.
Oh, there's loads of those. And so that was always quite stressful. So anyway, the story, you came rushing into the teacher's room, stressed out because you were obviously trying to teach some grammar and you realised you were a little bit out of your depth. And it was like, oh, guys, so present perfect, yeah? Present perfect. That's when you don't give a fuck about time, right?
I deny that to this day. I think it's Shirley.
Shirley made that up. I don't know. I'm sure I remember hearing you say present perfect is when you don't give a fuck about time.
I struggled teaching the present simple, let alone the present perfect. I struggled with all of it, even with the spelling. As you know, I still can't spell grammar. And so.
Well, I mean, I think Andy Johnson tells the story. I'll need to get him to tell it. But there was that. I mean, if you don't mind, you're not a teacher anymore.
I don't mind.
That you went into a business English class at Holland Park with a bunch of executives, like one of the more sort of high level English courses. And you wrote, like, on the board, right, today we're going to do some grammar. And you wrote grammar, G-R-A-M-M-E-R.
I was just testing them, so you picked up on it.
You spelled the word grammar wrong, and then apparently you were doing because the reason this story has gone down in history is because I think Andy was observing you.
Yeah, he was.
And you did, like, first conditional, and you wrote the first conditional up on the board wrong. So it's like you started writing it to teach it and you wrote it up wrong, and then you kind of realized that you got it wrong, and one of the students corrected you. Right. Or one of the students did something good, got something right. And then you were like, yeah, you see, look, you said to Andy, look, he learned from the master.
That's true. Yeah.
And this like Swiss guy was like, yeah, the master of disaster.
I also remember that another Swiss student saying to me, She goes, yeah, he said, yeah, Howard, you should go and teach in Switzerland. They earn a lot of money out there, like three times your salary. I was like, oh yeah, really, really. And he goes, yeah, and she knows even less than you, or something like that. I was like, what? You know?
Well, like, I had a teacher in Switzerland. She earns three times your salary, and she learned. Yeah, she knew even less than you about English. Yeah, that kind of stuff happened all the time.
It was all good.
I think you know, you had to be a bit thick-skinned, didn't you, when you were teaching people sometimes, because, you know, you could get some quite negative things, and you could either ride with it, or just like let it get you down. So I think, you know.
Yeah, I had some.
After a few years, to be honest, I didn't really care that much. I was like, you know what, if you want to give me a 3 or a 2 or whatever, go ahead.
Yeah.
What's your favorite? What's your favorite nationality?
Favorite nationality to teach?
Yeah.
Italians were always good. They always,
yeah,
always
seem
to. Italians always seem to be like super friendly and communicative and chatty and rarely, Brazilians, if ever, had a problem.
Brazilians and Italians, I loved them.
Brazilians as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Were always like really
very positive.
Cool. Late to the class, but.
Yeah, even better. I mean, you know, but yeah, no, they were great. I loved all the Latinos, fantastic.
Yeah, and I had a soft spot for the Japanese, having lived there for a couple of years and stuff. You gave up being an English teacher, and you've kind of transitioned into something else. So what do you do now?
So now I sell furniture, mid-century furniture.
Mid-century furniture. So what, yeah. This...
Furniture from like the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Okay. Does that count as antiques?
No, like, I mean, generally, like, antiques are anything over 100 years old. So I started out selling, you know, like, antiques, typical kind of dark wood furniture. And then I moved on to kind of the retro, which is what everyone wants in London. And, you know, in the kind of cities around the world, really, is kind of what's hip nowadays.
Yeah. Retro.
The retro, yeah.
Vintage, mid-century furniture. What kind of thing? Yeah. Can you describe the sorts of things that we're talking about?
So, you know, like, kind of Danish kind of teak. Sideboards and chest of drawers, you know, kind of lighter wood, that sort of thing.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Scandi style stuff.
Exactly. That's what everyone wants at the moment.
How did you get into that then?
Basically, how did I get into it? I've been teaching for about 8 years, and I was like, you know what? I feel like I'm just on a merry-go-round here. And I just kind of like thought, you know, I want to do something else. And my wife got pregnant. She wasn't my wife then, but she got pregnant. I was like, you know what? Am I really going to be teaching for the rest of my life? And my mum's an antiques dealer, and she has been for a long time. So she kept saying to me, why don't you try and get into this game? You know, try and start to sell, buy and sell things. And I went to a car boot sale. I don't know if your listeners know what a car boot sale is, but it's basically on a Saturday or Sunday in England, people just rock up to a car park with the stuff in their car, stuff they don't want. And they sell it for, you know, very cheap price. So I think I went to one in Battersea to a car boot sale, and I bought a mirror for like 20 quid. And I think I sold it the next week for like 50 quid. And I was like, well, you know what? I made 30 quid on that. So I thought, yeah, that was quite easy. So then next week I went back and I bought a couple. And then I started buying mirrors, and this is while I was teaching. And then basically I started filling up my house with stuff, and I started making more money doing that than I was teaching. And then I had my first kid, and I was like, you know what, I'll give this a go. And so I started doing it full time, and that was about 7 years ago. And then it's kind of just grown organically from then to where it is nowadays.
Mm. Wow, cool. So do you have like a, what is it, a shop? Is it an online shop?
I've got in a place called Peckham, which is in Southeast London, which actually got voted, quite funnily, the 7th coolest place in the world in Time Out magazine. Last year,
seriously,
if you came to Peckham, you would laugh. But you know, some of your listeners should go there. It's quite a cool place. There's a lot of like funky bars and trendy people hanging about.
But Peckham has had a mixed reputation, hasn't it? Because it used to be quite.
Yeah,
it's quite. Is it still rough? Is it still as rough as it used to be?
Certainly rough around there. I mean, there's certain parts which are, you know, quite rough. But it's getting gentrified at a rate that I couldn't even. You know, every time you walk down the high street, there's another bar. There's another, you know, trendy new. You know, mainly bars and cafes and that kind of thing, which if you'd gone there 10 years ago, you know, you wouldn't recognize it. And a lot of younger kind of hipsters, sort of 20 to 30 year old, are all moving in.
Sort of 40 something.
It's changed massively.
40-something vintage furniture dealers and...
Exactly. Well, coming up to 50-something soon.
Oh, yeah, so, really?
Yeah. Yeah, not too far away.
Cool. So you've got like a... I think it's called a lockup. Is that technically the right term?
No, I've got a warehouse now.
Warehouse. So
it's like, about 1,200 square foot, which I don't know how you describe it. So it's like a... It's fairly big. So basically, it's in a railway arch underneath Peckham Railway Station.
Yeah.
So I've got one of those. It's very, very high. And basically, during the week, it's basically a storage space, but it's also a shop. So on Saturday and Sunday, I'm open 9 to 5. But people come down during the week as well. So they make an appointment during the week. But Saturday, Sunday, I'm open both days, you know, and everything's laid out. And so, yeah, it's kind of like a vintage fair, should we say. I don't know. It was, yeah.
That's cool. But does most of your business come through customers dropping by the shop at the weekend, or is it mostly online orders?
To be honest with you, it's. I mean, the only way people know about me is online. So, like, I mainly advertise on like Facebook, on Instagram, on like Gumtree, and other websites. But mainly, to be honest with you, Facebook Marketplace is great, and also my own website, and Instagram as well. Yeah, but yeah, so that's kind of how people know me, and then word has spread. So, you know, someone was coming and say, oh, you know, my mate bought Cyborg a few last weekend. So, you know, I've come down. So so that's kind of how it's sort of grown. So, I mean, generally, I don't have people walking by because it's on a kind of an industrial part of Peckham. So it's all, you know, it's all done through the web.
All right. So someone would go to, they'd be on Instagram or whatever, and you've got a picture of a sideboard. What is a sideboard, by the way?
Sideboard's like generally like a 6-foot thing. You put your TV on and you hide your stuff inside. And I don't know. How do I describe it? Like I should really know.
Welcome back to the days of being an English teacher.
Yeah. It's
It's like a long cupboard, isn't it? Like a long, yeah, wide cupboard. Not very high. As you say, you can put your TV on it.
That's why you're a better teacher than me. So yeah, kind of they see my stuff on the internet and they either buy it through my website and then I get it delivered to them, or they come down in, you know, a car or a zip van or whatever and pick it up themselves, and then maybe buy more stuff as well. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Ah, so when they hit the shop, are you doing some sort of point of sale?
Of course, you need to upsell. So, you know, because it's all generally the same era. And that's generally what people are kind of, you know, if they're buying one thing, they want their house to look kind of similar with similar bits of furniture. So often they'll buy, sometimes people will buy multiple things. So, yeah, I mean, interestingly, I had a guy from South Korea who came last week and bought probably about 20 bits of furniture off me, which he shipped out to South Korea.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of worldwide. Everyone is at the moment, mid-century furniture is kind of the hot furniture thing.
So, listeners, if you are in search of some authentic mid-century...
Come down to Peckham. And if you say Luke's podcast, you get 10% off as well.
Listeners.
Wow.
Check out the exclusive discount that Howard is offering you,
just
for being Lepsters. So if you say, I listen to Luke's podcast...
Oh, it's a Lepster. I didn't know that.
Lepster,
right.
Yeah. It's L-E-P. yeah, that's right. L-E-P, mm-hmm. Lepster. So if you... But the thing is, listeners, if you'd want to get the 10% discount, you have to pronounce both my name and the word podcast correctly. So it's not Luke's English podcast. It's not Luke's English postcard. Okay. Luke's English podcast. If you can say that correctly, you get a 10% discount.
Yep.
Are there any terms and conditions for this?
No, no terms, conditions. That offer applies for the next 6 months.
From the time that they listen to this or from the time this
is published? Exactly.
Wait, no, surely it's from the time that this is published. Not from the time they listen to it, because they could listen to this in 10 years.
You know, I'm not gonna get the dates, you know. If they can, you know what, next year, whenever.
Okay.
It's fine.
That's awesome.
I'll give them 10% off.
Okay, brilliant. And you've got other stuff. What kind of other stuff then do people generally pick up when they've bought a sideboard? They come in to get it. What other kind of stuff are they getting?
Like just your kind of. I mainly sell. I don't really sell quirky stuff. I sell stuff that people need for the house. So sideboards, chests of drawers, record cabinets. You know, because vinyl is big nowadays, isn't it? Everyone wants somewhere to store their vinyl. chairs, dining tables, armchairs, mirrors, kind of your common all sort of household sort of stuff.
You said
50. And I've got a website as well, guys, so if you want to check it out, go on there. What's I'm the sure name? Luke will tell you what the website is later.
I will be giving all the details.
Great.
What's the you said 50s and 60s, right? Do you find that there is a point at which the furniture stops being sort of interesting for customers?
I mean generally, yeah, like when you go, if you go to like the 80s and 90s, there's a lot of pine and stuff like that, so pine's quite hard to sell. But you know, I mean, there's, it swings around about, things come back, so I'm sure. And because at the moment, like antique furniture, the kind of dark furniture, is very hard to sell, but I'm sure in 5-10 years time that'll come back again and people will be snapping it up. Sorry, what was your question again?
Well, basically, it wasn't a very good question. I expect my listeners were like, what? So what I meant was, is there a period that is like out of fashion? I mean, so if you get into the 70s, does
so like the antique furniture is very out of fashion at the moment.
You're talking sort of pre
dark.
Sorry, you're talking about stuff that was made before the sort of turn of the century.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I mean, even though in some places it could still kind of command big prices, generally I'd say, certainly in London and to the sort of people I'm selling to in their sort of 20s to 40s, they're not really interested in the kind of dark furniture, because generally they've got small flats, and you know, dark furniture in a small flat doesn't really go that well. So yeah.
Also, that dark furniture tends to be quite ornate, doesn't it? Sort of curved, curved lines and a lot of details and things. Whereas the mid-century stuff is very plain, isn't it? It's very sparse.
Exactly. It's very simple. And yeah. So, I think you can explain it better than me, to be honest with you. But yeah, you know, I mean, that's just, it's just the fashion at the moment, but everything changes, you know, it's very cyclical. So something I was selling 3-4 years ago might no longer be popular. Yeah. So you have to keep an eye with what's going on and keep changing what you're doing and what you're selling.
Okay. Can I ask you where you actually get all the stuff?
No. No, to be honest, I mean, I've got contacts now. So like over the years, I've built up people that can supply me with furniture. Okay. So from them.
So I guess like one of the things that you're offering is the fact that over the years you have found sources for this stuff. It's not easy to find, but
it's very difficult to find. So you need, if you've got good sources, you can get a plentiful amount, then you're in the right place at the right time, then you're onto a winner.
Okay, cool. Have you ever bought a fake? Do you have to deal with fake stuff? Is that
no? I don't really think like in the 60s or 70s, they didn't really make a lot from what I know. I mean, because I don't sell high end furniture. I sell like middle of the road, you know. So typically, I'll sell a sideboard for £300-£500. You know, you can buy them for £5,000-£15,000. You know, sort of higher end ones. But as far as I know, you don't really get fakes. I mean, there's a lot of people who try and pass furniture off as everyone says their furniture is Danish when it clearly isn't. So, you know, I don't really do that because I think you're just cheating the customers. So, we don't really have fakes. I mean, there's better made, you know, the Danish furniture is like really well made. It's beautiful. Whereas some of the kind of mid-century furniture is very badly made. It's just a veneer. Do you know what a veneer is? So it's very thin wood with chipboard underneath. So the quality isn't that good. So I kind of try and sell the better quality stuff.
Right. So talking about selling, okay. Let's you know, in English teaching we love to do role plays and stuff all the time. Right?
Yeah.
Let's imagine that I'm a customer. I've bought a sideboard on your website and I've come down to your warehouse to pick it up.
Yeah.
See if you can try and upsell some other bits, other bits and pieces to me, okay? So I just turn up. I've parked my van outside. It's a large van.
Now you've got a van with you, I'm already excited.
Yeah,
I'm like, right,
it's a large. It's
more.
The van is too big.
Oh, I'm like, wow.
It's a large transit van.
I can't hide my excitement.
There's too much space in this van, but this is the van I've got. So I've I walk in. I've got some quite nice shoes on.
First of all, I check your pockets to see if they're bulging or not.
Okay.
And then I know I'm a tour winner.
Are they bulging?
Because I can actually see your face, so I'm thinking this guy doesn't have a lot of money. But generally, yeah. Like, I mean, when people come in, you just like, go on then.
Okay, let's do it. So I walk in, and I've just come down to pick up the sideboard that I ordered online.
You're Luke, aren't you?
Luke Thompson, yeah.
Oh, yeah. How you doing? You all right?
Good, thanks. Yeah, I found the place all right.
Great, great, great. Yeah, you bought this sideboard here, didn't you?
Is this the one? Yeah, this looks like it. Yeah. Okay. Do you mind if I just have a look at it before?
No, by all means, by all means.
Okay, just have a little look. Okay.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, okay, the legs are on. That's fine. It seems to be okay. Does it have a mark on it, by the way? I mean, a maker's mark of some kind? Is there a label in this one?
This is more of a generic one. So, hence, you know, if you're looking for something, you know, with...
so the answer's no, right? There's no...
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. But, you know, it's beautiful. And I think, you know, you've got an absolute bargain for that price.
How much is it again? Sorry?
295.
That's right. Yeah, of course. Oh, that is, you know, we did agree that. Okay.
Yeah. But why don't you have a look around, see what else I've got? And, I've got lots of other bits which would complement that.
Oh, yeah?
You just moved house, haven't you? So I'm sure you want to fill your house with my stuff.
How did you know I've just moved house? I didn't tell you.
Because I know your sister. I didn't. We used to go out together.
What? Yeah, sure. I'll have a look. I mean, I'm really just interested in this particular item. But I mean, do you have some others that are like this?
Yeah, I've got another. What kind of what are you actually looking for? What kind of size? Because size is very important. What I found in this business is
size matters.
Most people have got a very specific space. So
yeah. So what we need is one that's about yay big. That's not very.
Do you know the exact measurements?
Do I know about measurements? Well, I know that I know that they exist, but so it's just give me a measurement. Go on.
I mean, I'm thinking like a high class gentleman like you would maybe like this Danish rosewood one for £1,000.
That does look nice. It's a bit above my price.
If you take it away now, I can do it for 900.
900. It's still a bit too much for me, I'm afraid. I might. Would you do 750? Because this is a very nice one, to be fair. And we've been looking for one like this, haven't we, darling? Yes, we have. That's my wife.
Tell you what, 800, take it away now, it's yours. Deal.
800. Yep. Tell you what, right, let me just have another look around, see if there's any other items in here that I like. Because that is great. That is exactly what we've been looking for. Let me just have a little look around, though, and see if there's some other stuff, okay?
Okay.
So a few minutes later, I found this lamp. Would you be willing to throw in these two lamps? If you throw in the two lamps, I'll take it for 800 and we've got
I'll be honest with you, I only just got them yesterday and I've already got someone coming down to see them. So to be honest, I think I'm looking for full price on those.
Okay. All right, that's a pity.
Because I'm gonna have to let the other customer down, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I see. Even though you,
but if you were to offer me full price, I might just do it.
How about half price?
Yeah, go on, you could have it.
Ah, oh, brilliant. Okay,
you look like your sister. I don't know your sister. It's yours.
Keep my sister out of it. Okay, I'll take it then. Thanks, mate. Right, can you put it in the van?
Yeah, me and my assistant. Because I've got someone.
Your sister. Your sister.
No, actually, my sister has worked there a couple of times.
I know your sister.
You know what? My sister worked. She worked twice, but you know, I had to fire her because she played Michael Bublé all day.
Is this real? This is real now, right? This is true.
Actually, real. And I didn't find out until I was on holiday, so I employed her for the day. And when I got back, a customer came in from the week before. She was like, "Oh, you know, I met your sister. Really, really nice." And she was playing Michael Bublé all day, and I was like, "What?" So anyway, she got fired. You know, you can't be selling this to Michael Bublé.
Literally, you fired her because of the music she played in the shop.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I would do the same.
Michael Bublé, it was too much.
Yeah,
Michael Bublé, Christmas hits.
Buble's all right, but you can have too much.
Come on. Not in a retro warehouse, you know. At least play something, I don't know, something slightly cool. Just don't play anything at all.
Either nothing or what? What's your music of choice?
To be honest with you, I like just something kind of more ambient to kind of, so people can have a conversation with each other and feel like they're not being listened to. They're not being too overbearing, so, you know, they can't think.
Just some general mood music. Kind of stuff.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, and then they can be like, what do you think of this one? Ooh,
yeah, this guy's a right idiot.
Yeah, this guy's really dodgy. I think we should leave straight away before he does something weird. tell me about the future, Howard. Have you got any predictions future of the industry?
The future, my future, or to be honest, I mean, the way it's gone, so I've been doing it for like 7 years. Who knows? You know, the stars, the limit, is that the expression? Yeah,
the sky's the limit.
What am I saying? The sky's the limit. I don't know. You know what? I take every day as it comes, because I think if you plan too far ahead, you know, you start seeing it as a job. I don't see it as a job. I just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
And obviously I've got a plan, but it's not like, right, in 5 years I'm going to be doing this or that, or I just kind of like take it as it goes. And yeah.
Well, it's going really, really well. I mean, it's amazing. You've got the warehouse and everything. You said 1,200 square feet.
Yeah, 1,200 square feet.
I think it's about 300 square meters. It's pretty big. It's about the 10th of a football
pitch.
And
it is rammed full of furniture as well. It's more of a warehouse at the moment than a boutique, because there's so much furniture in there.
What's the best thing you've ever found, or the best item that you've ever got hold of? Your favorite thing?
To be honest with you, I mean, I found a few things for free. My neighbor actually left a beautiful bookcase on his front, on his thing, only two doors away, which I sold for over £300. It literally took me about 5 minutes. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, actually, the best thing I've ever sold, my favorite, was I bought a leather sofa from an auction, from Greenwich Auction, which no longer exists. But I bought that about 3 years ago. And I went to pick it up in a van. And I went, I drove about 5 minutes, I stopped at a shop to get a drink. And this bloke looked in the back of my van, because the back was open. He was like, how much do you want for that sofa? I was like, £300. So literally I'd owned the sofa for 10 minutes and I bought it for like £70. And he bought it off me for £300. So I made £230 for literally in about 10 minutes.
Wow.
So it's not the most profit, but it was just a great sale, because, you know, you didn't really have to do anything. So that's one of my favorites.
Do you often buy things at auction?
No, I used to, but a lot of them have closed down now in London. Because I think of, you know, online, because of eBay and all these other things, it's a lot more popular to sell stuff online. So they do still exist, but you can go there for the whole day and get nothing, you know. So, or you can win big or you can get nothing. So it's quite risky. And it's quite time consuming as well. It depends who else is there. You know, if there's one other person who wants what you want, you can end up in a bidding war and end up, you know, spending well over the odds. Or
auction, I mean, it looks pretty cool when you see it on TV, and there's like guys kind of with newspapers kind of going, you know, 50,000 to the gentleman in the hat, you know, and there's guys on the telephone and stuff like that. It looks pretty exciting, buying and selling at auction. Is it? I mean, is it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you can, as I say, you can do really well, you know, because stuff generally, they start very low at an auction because they want to move it on, because they get loads of stuff every week. So, and if there's no one else who's interested in that item, then you can get something for literally nothing. But if there is someone else, you know, you can then end up in a bidding war with them. Like, you looking at them looking at you thinking, right, I really want this. And you can end up spending, you know, so much and literally just about making that back when you sell it. It was a lot of fun. It's a great learning game as well, because you can see what other dealers are buying and the sorts of things that are in and what's not in. But I don't really go to them anymore.
Right. When you get an item, do you have to do anything to it before you sell it on?
If something's like really, really, like, for example, I had a sideboard which I think it cost me £100. It was a Danish one. It's quite a rare one. And it cost me about £300 to get it. I got someone, I know a guy who can like do them up for me, and he literally redid the whole sideboard, and I sold it for quite a lot more, you know, once that was done. But generally most of the furniture is not worth spending a lot of time or money on, because you're not going to make that back. So, you know, everything gets polished and stuff gets fixed a little bit, you know, here and there. And, you know, sometimes the chairs are wobbly, so they need fixing and stuff, but generally not a lot of stuff. But the more expensive stuff, yeah, I know people who can do it up for me. So,
yeah,
that goes.
Has COVID been a problem?
You know what? My business has never done better than during COVID. It's been incredible. Literally from the moment it kicked off, because everyone's at home on their phones buying stuff and they're all still getting paid. I've never actually done better than in the last sort of 4 months, which is a terrible, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing to say, but I've just been lucky because I'm one of those sort of businesses where everyone's doing up their house. You know, they're all at home. They think, what else are we going to do? Let's do up a house. We've been meaning to do it for years and years. So they're all buying furniture.
Wow.
So it's been incredible, yeah.
Okay. Well, good for you, I guess, yeah?
It's been all right.
My brother asked me to ask you this. What do you think about upcycling? What is upcycling anyway?
So like upcycling is like changing the furniture to make it, as you see it, better or more modern. So like there's some really bad types of upcycling. I call it bad, and that's maybe me being snobbish, but they call it like shabby chic. So people will paint like a chest of drawers, and then they'll scratch it so it looks kind of old, you know, scratch it on the edges and stuff like that.
Yeah, they'll paint it and then they'll scratch all the paint off.
There's a lot of people who are doing that, and it can be done. I mean, some people can do it really well and it can look amazing, but generally it's not done that well. Some people upcycle stuff and it looks incredible. You can totally change a piece of furniture to, if it's done well, if you know what you're doing, and you can make it look absolutely incredible, and you can make a lot of money doing it. So if you've got the skills, then there are a lot of people doing it, but there's a lot of people doing it really well. So I don't do it, mm-hmm. but yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. Well, it's really great to talk to you. And
you too.
Listeners, you do international sales, right? So if someone is interested, they can go to your website, which is Vintique London. Yeah. I'll be explaining that
just
again.
Message me with your postcode, and I'll come back to your price. I mean, I sent a sideboard out to California about 3 weeks ago. So some stuff to South Korea, as I've said. I mean, it's not so common sending stuff abroad, but we do it sometimes.
Yeah. All right. That's really cool. And don't forget, listeners, that 10% discount. If you can pronounce the name of this podcast correctly, and even if you can't, you'll get the 10% discount. Howard, it's really good to talk to you again. Thank you very much for talking to me and my audience on the podcast.
Pleasure.
And I must come down and have a look at the place.
And you too, Luke, get a 10% discount if you come down.
Oh yeah, really?
Yeah, bring the missus. Bring the missus, because men coming down their own, they never buy anything. They always need to bring their wife, because she's, as we know, she's the decision maker.
Right? Have you noticed that? Have you learned anything else about human nature from this?
The kind of main thing, like when women say, oh yeah, I'm going to send my boyfriend down to pick up the sideboard, usually he'll come down. And if it's like, say it's £200, he'll say, yeah, I'll give you 50 quid for it. I'm like, no, it's £200. They'll go, right, I'm not having it. So then they'll walk off, and I know there'll be a massive row when they get home. So yeah, it's always.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, you know, see you soon, hopefully, if that's at all possible these days.
Yeah, definitely.
But thanks again for talking to me. Cool. It's been cool. All right, mate.
Cool.
Cheers.
You can already see that chill in the glass out. That's a good thing. You've got perfect eyes and a really cold glass.
Till then, I'll be somewhere getting better, been a dance in the gym.
So there you go, folks. That was my conversation with my mate Howard Roach and his vintage furniture business in London. I hope you found that interesting. I particularly enjoyed reminiscing about the old teaching days at the beginning of the conversation.
So there you go, vintiquelondon.co.uk, vintiquelondon.co.uk. That's where you go if you're interested in checking out any of Howard's stuff. I mean, even if you're not interested in making a purchase, go and have a look at the website just to see the sort of stuff that we're talking about. You can see pictures of sideboards and bookcases and chests of drawers and all those things. And you can see the lovely stuff that he's got for sale. But yes, it is possible to do international shippings. And don't forget, you get a 10% discount for all Lepsters. Even if you can't pronounce Luke's English podcast, if you just say, Luke podcast, look podcat, that'll do. And you'll still get the 10% discount. So there you are. Thanks again to Howard for being on the podcast. Thanks, Howard. Thanks again for being on the podcast after a sort of nearly 11-year gap. We'll catch up with Howard again in, 2031? If there's anything left of the world, oh my God, what is planet Earth going to be like in 2031? We'll all just be floating around in hover cars and we'll be what's that thing? When you teleport, yeah, we'll all be teleporting everywhere, flying around on jetpacks. We'll all be eating, all of our meals will just be pills. You'll just take a pill out of a silver wrapper, put it in the microwave, and it just turns into a sort of a cake, and you eat that. And you're just eating three of those a day. The air has become so polluted that you can't actually breathe it anymore. So everyone lives in these sort of pods, these sealed pods. Yeah, it's a bit like the sort of science fiction, dystopian science fiction film I had in my head. When was that? In the last episode, the free last free one? Or I think that's in a premium episode. I ended up going off on a complete mega random ramble tangent about a science fiction film, which happens in Luke's English Podcast Premium. It's not all just serious language teaching. There's plenty of silly nonsense as well to keep you entertained as we go. And don't forget premium series 24, ladies and gents. If you're a premium Lepster, you need to go and listen to those episodes. Parts 1 to 8 are now available for you. Target language, pronunciation and memory test, and so on. That's how it builds. We've got probably 12 episodes in the series, but do check out parts 1 to 8. Also, all of the pronunciation videos that I recorded in June, do check those out as well. You'll find them in the pronunciation videos category in your phone and also on the website. teacherluke.co.uk/premium-info. That's where you get the details about Luke's English Podcast Premium and how to sign up and all that stuff. Thank you very much for listening to Luke's English Podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you again. How about you? Where are you? What are you doing? Where are you? You could just, leave a comment under this episode just saying where you are and what you've been doing while listening to this episode. I'm very curious. I'm always curious about what's going on. So where are you? What are you doing? And what are you wearing? No, you don't have to do the what are you wearing thing. But simply, where are you and what are you doing while you listen to this? Thank you for listening. I'll speak to you again very soon in the podcast and on the podcast. I'll speak to you very soon on the podcast, but for now it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Put on the Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.